lizard-like creatures had come to dwell in the trees and the ponds, croaking and flitting among the shadows. The incenses and perfumes which filled the air were thick and cloying. Dark smokes coiled like serpents along the ground. There had been three attempts upon his life. The captain of the palace guard had been the last to try, but his blade had turned to a reptile in his hand and struck at his face, taking out his eyes and filling his veins with a venom that had caused him to darken and swell, to die crying for a drink of water. Siddhartha considered the ways of the demon, and in that moment he struck. His power had grown again, slowly, since that day in Hellwell when last he had wielded it. Oddly independent of the brain of his body, as Yama had once told him, the power turned like a slow pinwheel at the center of the space that was himself. It spun again faster, and he hurled it against the force of the other. A cry escaped Taraka, and a counter-thrust of pure energy came back at Siddhartha like a spear. Partly, he managed to deflect it, to absorb some of its force. Still, there was pain and turmoil within him as the brunt of the attack touched upon his being. He did not pause to consider the pain, but struck again, as a spearman strikes into the darkened burrow of a fearsome beast. Again he heard his lips cry out. Then the demon was building black walls against his power. But one by one, these walls fell before his onslaught. And as they fought, they spoke. "O man of many bodies," said Taraka, "why do you begrudge me a few days within this one? It is not the body you were born into, and you, too, do but borrow it for a time. Why, then, do you feel my touch to be a thing of defilement? One day you may wear another body untouched by me, so why do you consider my presence a pollution, a disease? Is it because there is that within you which is like unto myself? Is it because you, too, know delight in the ways of the Rakasha, tasting the pain you cause like a pleasure, working your will as you choose upon whatsoever you choose? Is it because of this? Because you too know and desire these things, but also bear that human curse called guilt? If it is, I mock you in your weakness, Binder, and I shall prevail against you." "It is because I am what I am, demon," said Siddhartha, hurling his energies back at him. "It is because I am a man who occasionally aspires to things beyond the belly and the phallus. I am not the saint the Buddhists think me to be, and I am not the hero out of legend. I am a man who knows much fear and who occasionally feels guilt. Mainly, though, I am a man who has set out to do a thing, and you are now blocking my way. Thus you inherit my curse. Whether I win or whether I lose now, Taraka, your destiny has already been altered. This is the curse of the Buddha, and you will never again be the same as once you were." And all that day they stood upon the balcony, garments drenched with perspiration. Like a statue they stood, until the sun had gone down out of the sky and the golden trail divided the dark bowl of the night. A moon leapt up above the garden wall. Later, another joined it. "What is the curse of the Buddha?" Taraka inquired over and over again. But Siddhartha did not reply. He had beaten down the final wall, and they fenced now with energies like flights of blazing arrows. From a temple in the distance there came the monotonous beating of a drum, and occasionally a garden creature croaked, a bird cried out, or a swarm of insects settled upon them, fed, and swirled away. Then, like a shower of stars, they came, riding upon the night wind, the freed of Hellwell, the other demons who had been loosed upon the world. They came in answer to Taraka's summons, adding their powers to his own. He became as a whirlwind, a tidal wave, a storm of lightnings. Siddhartha felt himself swept over by a titanic avalanche, crushed, smothered, buried. The last thing he knew was the laughter within his throat. How long it was before he recovered, he did not know. It was a slow thing this time, and it was in a palace where demons walked as servants that he woke up. When the last anesthetic bonds of mental fatigue fell away, there was strangeness about him. The grotesque revelries continued. Parties were held in the dungeons, where the demons would animate corpses to pursue their victims and embrace them. Dark miracles were wrought, such as the grove of twisted trees which sprang from the marble flags of the throne room itself. A grove wherein men slept without awakening, crying out as old nightmares gave way to new. But a different strangeness had entered the palace. Taraka was no longer pleased. "What is the curse of the Buddha?" he inquired again, as he felt Siddhartha's presence pressing once more upon his own. Siddhartha did not reply at once. The other continued, "I feel that I will give you back your body one day soon. I grow tired of this sport, of this palace. I grow tired, and I think perhaps the day draws near when we should make war with heaven. What do you say to this, Binder? I told you I would keep my word." Siddhartha did not answer him. "My pleasures diminish by the day. Do you know why this is, Siddhartha? Can you tell me why strange feelings now come over me, dampening my strongest moments, weakening me and casting me down when I should be elated, when I should be filled with joy? Is this the curse of the Buddha?"
"Yes," said Siddhartha.
"Then lift your curse, Binder, and I will depart this very day. I will give you back this cloak of flesh. I long again for the cold, clean winds of the heights. Will you free me now?"
"It is too late, O chief of the Rakasha. You have brought this thing upon yourself."
"What thing? How have you bound me this time?"
"Do you recall how, when we strove upon the balcony, you mocked me? You told me that I, too, took pleasure in the ways of the pain which you work. You were correct, for all men have within them both that which is dark and that which is light. A man is a thing of many divisions, not a pure, clear flame such as you once were. His intellect often wars with his